Today is Wednesday, November 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. A top U.S. diplomat is heading to Qatar for talks with Taliban leaders regarding Afghanistan's humanitarian crisis.
In our allies and partners' engagement with the Taliban over a period of years, we made clear that if they chose a military path to power, that aid would disappear, and that is what occurred.
Thousands of Iraqi Kurdish university students protest to demand a reinstatement of monthly stipends.
Look, all the young people are leaving this country. They are all gone. They have left the region because of these thieves.
And New Zealand will keep its borders closed well into next year due to COVID-19. We'll have these stories and more next. U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan Thomas West will head to Doha, Qatar next week for meetings with Taliban leaders. West told VOA that the U.S. is deeply concerned about the humanitarian crisis in that country, as VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Conditions are dire in many parts of Afghanistan, with the United Nations World Food Program saying almost 24 million people, or 60% of the population, are suffering from acute hunger. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said U.S. Special Representative Tom West will discuss issues of vital U.S. national interest, including counterterrorism and humanitarian assistance, with Taliban leaders in 2 weeks of meetings in Doha, Qatar. In an exclusive interview with VOA Tuesday, West said Afghanistan's worsening humanitarian crisis has a lot to do with the loss of international aid. The Afghan economy depended on that aid to a large degree over 20 years. Thomas West, the U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan, spoke with VOA on Tuesday.
Some 75% of the former government's public expenditures were foreign donor funded. Some 40% of the country's GDP was foreign donor funded. And so really in our engagement, and frankly in our allies and partners' engagement with the Taliban over a period of years, we made clear that if they chose a military path to power, that aid would disappear, and that is what occurred.
Last week, the Taliban's foreign ministry spokesperson called on the U.S. Congress to release Afghan assets frozen after the Taliban takeover of the country. He said the economic misery at home could prompt a mass exodus and refugee problems for other countries. West said it is not as simple as the Taliban might think to get aid that is frozen in the U.S. and other countries moving again. Here again, Thomas West, the U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan, speaking to VOA.
There are very complicated legal reasons as well as judicial reasons for why that money is not moving from particular banks into other places.
There has been some localized progress towards U.S. and international demands for the Taliban to respect human and women's rights. Schools for girls from grades 7 to 12 have reopened in Afghanistan's third largest city, Herat. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
In an Associated Press interview, a former U.S. Agriculture Department advisor in Afghanistan, Caroline Claren, says she was homesick after having no choice but to leave her work in Afghanistan. AP correspondent Julie Watson has this report.
Okay, I'm going to do it now. 7-year-old Ali, 12-year-old Maiwan, and 9-year-old Sala practice their favorite sport, cricket, with their cousin, using rocks instead of a ball on a dirt road a few miles outside Fergus Falls, Minnesota. The farm they're on is far from their homeland of Afghanistan. Caroline Claren and her wife Cheryl Raymond watch the boys with smiles on their faces. The boys' father, Isanula Patan, says visiting them has become a favorite pastime.
When the week is just come, they will say, let's go to auntie's house. We will play over there. My kids, they call him auntie.
While they're not really related by blood, they share a special bond. Claren is an agricultural engineer who helped get the family safely into the United States a few months before Kabul fell to the Taliban in August. The bond between the couple and this conservative Muslim family spans 11,000 miles and stretches back more than a decade. Claren was a United States agricultural advisor in Afghanistan's Paktika province when she met Patan in 2009.
He was 19, 20 years old, very, very young. but very confident.
Patan had recently graduated with a degree in horticulture, and Claren asked what his people needed most.
And he said, basic agriculture supplies, seeds and trees, and teach them how to plant gardens and maintain and establish orchards. It was that simple.
Eventually, she had a team of about a dozen working to transform farms in a war zone. They were known as Caroline's Guys. They risked their lives helping America during its longest war. The program eventually trained about 5,000 farmers in Paktika from 2009 to 2011. They provided growers with things like seeds, apple trees, pruning equipment, and small grants. They taught farmers tangible solutions, including using buckets with drip lines to irrigate gardens and conserve water. Claren said the Taliban tried to sabotage the trust they built with farmers. An explosive blew up in a red bucket like the ones they used for irrigation. All of the team received death threats, but they stuck with it. After Claren left in 2011, the program was gutted. She was racked with guilt.
When I got on the plane, it was like leaving my family on the helipad. And I felt like I deserted them for a long, long time after that.
But Claren never forgot them. When several of them contacted her to say that they had received death threats from the Taliban, she was eager to help, working late into the night, filling out applications for special immigrant visas and humanitarian parole. So far, she's helped get five of her former employees into the U.S. and is working with several more, tracking their visa applications and calling senators to apply pressure so they don't languish like the thousands of others in the backlog system for special immigrant visas. Those visas are granted to Afghans who supported the U.S. government during the war. Scores of U.S. combat veterans have also been laboring to get their interpreters out, forming a vast network of support. Claren has done it all on her own, working from the basement office of her 1910 Minnesota farmhouse and drawing from her retirement funds to do what she can to rescue the group of men who share her love of farming. The couple has spent just under $10,000 since May on things like airfare and visa applications.
My sister said, "You got your own little underground railroad in the basement."
The Patans arrived in May, 7 years after Patan first applied for entry. When Claren picked them up at the airport in Minneapolis at midnight for the three-hour drive back to Fergus Falls, she was consumed with joy.
And it was like my son came home. I mean, really, that's what it was like after a long absence. And we hadn't seen each other in like 10 years. And I said, "I'm so happy you're here." And he said, "I can see that. I can feel that."
The couple helped Patan get settled in the Ottertail County seat of Fergus Falls, a town of about 14,000. A farming county that twice voted for Donald Trump might seem like an unlikely sanctuary for Muslim refugees. Fergus Falls has no mosque, no markets selling halal meat, or thriving cricket leagues like in Sacramento, California, or Fairfax, Virginia. But Patan said the community has been welcoming.
In Fergus Falls, they have a really good people, really friendly people. If you need any things or you need any help in your work, they will do that for you.
Raymond helped get the kids enrolled in school. She was thrilled as they quickly began adapting to life in America. Patan's wife, Sadiqa, is learning English online while also learning to read and write. Anissa Nula Patan is preparing to get a commercial driver's license. Claren says she won't rest until all of her guys and their families are out. The couple considers helping families like the Patans an honor and a duty.
When people ask me why we do this or how we can do this, my question was, my answer is, for me, there's no way to not do this.
Patan is grateful that his family is safe.
Caroline, she saved our lives.
Julie Watson, The Associated Press.
Sweden has chosen Magdalena Andersson as its new prime minister. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Andersson has been approved by Sweden's parliament as the country's first ever female prime minister, replacing Stefan Löfven as leader of the centre-left Social Democrats. The development marks a milestone for Sweden, viewed for decades as one of Europe's most progressive countries, but which has yet to have a woman in the top political post. The Social Democratic-leaning government has described itself as feminist, putting equality between women and men at the heart of national and international work. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
You're listening to VOA News.
You want to listen to the latest African music? Dance to the best African beat from across the African continent? Then you don't have a problem. Just tune in to the African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays at exactly 0900 and 2000 Universal Time. African Beat, the show that brings happiness into your homes, smiles on your faces. So join me, your host, David Bandy, Monday through Friday, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time on The Voice of America.
African Beat is the best. It's number one. We love it.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. The Biden administration has invited Taiwan to its Summit for Democracy next month, according to a list of participants published on Tuesday. It's a move that infuriated China, which views the democratically governed island as its territory. Reuters correspondent Emma McCarthy reports.
In a move that's infuriated China, the Biden administration has invited Taiwan to its Summit for Democracy next month, according to a list of participants published on Tuesday. The first of its kind gathering is a test of President Biden's assertion, announced in his first foreign policy address in office in February, that he would return the United States to global leadership to face down authoritarian forces led by China and Russia. There are 110 participants on the State Department's invitation list for the virtual event, which aims to help stop democratic backsliding and the erosion of rights and freedoms worldwide. China and Russia are notably absent. Taiwan's foreign ministry said the government would be represented by its digital minister and Taiwan's de facto ambassador in Washington. China's foreign ministry said it was firmly opposed to the invite. Sharp differences over democratically governed Taiwan, which China considers its own territory, persisted during a virtual meeting earlier this month between Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping. The White House said that while Biden reiterated long-standing U.S. support for the One China policy, he said he strongly opposes unilateral efforts to change the status quo or undermine peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait.
That was Reuters reporter Emma McCarthy. Thousands of Iraqi Kurdish university students converged on the streets Tuesday to demand the government reinstate monthly stipends that were halted in 2014. VOA's Dilshad Anwar has more from Sule Mania in this report narrated by Bezjan Hamdard.
Thousands of Kurdish students took to the streets of numerous cities in northern Iraq, including Soleimania and Erbil, on Tuesday, demanding their monthly stipends be restored by the autonomous government of Iraqi Kurdistan. Due to falling oil prices and a costly campaign against the Islamic State terror group, the government stopped paying the stipends, worth about $50, in 2014.
Look, all the young people are leaving this country. They are all gone. They have left the region because of these thieves.
Protests have been going on in Soleimania for 3 days. They reportedly grew bigger and more violent on Tuesday. Local media report that several protesters were injured and security personnel deployed tear gas to disperse the crowds. Protesters also set fire to the city's ruling party's offices. Some shouted more radical slogans such as "Down with Family Rule," a reference to the Barzani and Talibani families' three-decade duopoly over the oil-rich region.
We have students who have deferred their studies because they have no money. I know a few girls in the dorm who wash their friends' clothes to earn some money for that day.
Even though the regional parliament had a special session on Tuesday to debate the problem, the protests showed no sign of subsiding. In an attempt to calm the crowds, authorities at Soleimanian University scheduled a 2-day recess. But on Tuesday, at least one university dean joined the protesters to show support for their demands.
We support the students' demands. We consider them legitimate and within their rights.
Students in Soleimania barricaded major roadways, promising to keep protesting until their demands are met. For Dilshad Anwar in Soleimania, Iraq, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
New Zealand will keep its borders closed to most international travelers for 5 more months, the government said on Wednesday. New Zealand's government says the country will not reopen until well into 2022. Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson has more.
New Zealand announced plans on Wednesday to reopen its borders to foreign travelers from the end of April next year. The country has had tight border controls in place since COVID-19 hit in March 2020. But those restrictions will now slowly be eased. From January next year, fully vaccinated New Zealanders and residence visa holders in Australia can travel to the country. New Zealanders from most other countries will be allowed in from February. Those arriving have to be fully vaccinated, but will no longer be required to stay at state quarantine facilities. Instead, other measures will be put in place, including self-isolation and a negative pre-departure test. COVID-19 Response Minister Chris Hipkins.
A phased approach to reconnecting with the world is the safest approach to ensure that risk is carefully managed and it reduces the potential impacts on vulnerable communities and on the New Zealand health system.
The government's tight border restrictions have helped New Zealand limit the spread of the disease, kept its death toll down, and allowed the economy to recover faster than others. But an outbreak of the highly contagious Delta variant earlier this year forced the government to change track. The main focus has now been placed on vaccinating the population, with the city of Auckland gradually opening up as inoculation rates climb.
That was Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson reporting. Reports are emerging of a new coalition government being formed in Germany. The three parties negotiating to form the country's next government will finalize their coalition agreement Wednesday, according to two of the prospective partners. The deal paves the way for center-left leader Olaf Scholz to replace longtime Chancellor Angela Merkel in the weeks ahead. The center-left Social Democrats have been discussing the alliance with the environmentalist Green Party and the pro-business Free Democrats since winning a national election by a narrow margin in late September. The other two parties said the agreement will be presented sometime Wednesday afternoon. It would be the first time Germany would have a three-way alliance if all parties sign on to the deal. It would replace what's been called the Grand Coalition of the country's traditional big parties. Germany is about to reach the somber milestone of 100,000 deaths from COVID-19 this week. Several European countries have already surpassed that mark, but Germany is Western Europe's most populous nation. The German government was hoping a robust healthcare system and the rollout of multiple vaccines would stave off a winter surge like the one that hit the country last year. But numbers have been rising steadily this fall, due in part to the national election. Resistance to getting the shot also remains strong. Vaccination rates have stalled at 68% of the population. South African health officials say they have asked the drug companies Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer to delay delivery of COVID-19 vaccines because the country now has too much supply. A little more than a third of adult South Africans are fully vaccinated. Earlier this year, the program did not have enough doses. Vaccination rates are lower across much of South Africa compared with the rest of the world. Many less developed countries struggle to secure enough doses. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has gone to the battlefront in the country's year-long war with rival fighters as the rebels approach the capital, Addis Ababa. A government spokesperson said the prime minister arrived at the front on Tuesday. State media showed no images of Abiy. Tens of thousands of people have been killed in the war between Ethiopian federal and allied troops and rebel fighters from the Tigray region. War has alarmed Ethiopians and outside observers who fear it could lead to a wider instability in the Horn of Africa region. A sixth person has died after a vehicle was driven into a Christmas parade in the U.S. Midwestern city of Waukesha, Wisconsin. A 39-year-old man has been charged with 5 counts of homicide in connection with that incident. AP correspondent Mike Gracia has more.
Prosecutors have charged Daryl Brooks Jr. with intentional homicide in the deaths of five people who were killed Sunday when an SUV was driven into a Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Conviction on first-degree intentional homicide carries a mandatory life sentence in Wisconsin. Brooks made his initial court appearance Tuesday. After that appearance, a prosecutor said a sixth person, a child, has died from injuries sustained in the crash. Authorities say more than 60 people were injured and several remain in critical condition. Brooks was free on $1,000 bail for a case in neighboring Milwaukee County in which he's accused of intentionally striking a woman with his car. I'm Mike Gracia.
Discarded tires can be an eyesore or a resource. In Senegal, a group of business students started a company that is giving old tires a new life. Alison Nkogo Fernandez reports from Dakar.
This is the company 26-year-old Yaiswa Doufal started with a business school classmate in Dakar. Here, old tires that once littered the environment are being turned into usable materials for things like floor tiles, playground surfaces, artificial turf, and more. The classmates came up with this idea from a school assignment where they were asked to identify a problem and find an innovative solution. Now, the company called eCover employs some 30 people.
We have this machine, which the workers call Paul, that cuts the tires into really long strips. I call that tire spaghetti. And we have this machine, which the workers call John, that cuts the tires into small shredded pieces.
She started eCover in 2015 with financing from WIC Capital, an investment fund supporting female entrepreneurship in West Africa. Fall, who has a master's degree in business administration, is the company's CEO.
We have the 0.5 millimeter size, which is very, very fine and can be used for children's play areas and basketball courts, among others. The 2-millimeter shredded aggregate looks like this. It gets turned into the synthetic turf used by sports complexes.
eCover is the first company in Senegal to manufacture tire aggregates that meets the standards of FIFA, the international soccer governing body, for use in artificial turf. FAL set up a lab that tests the aggregate to ensure quality control.
FIFA has the right to say that the players do not play on artificial turf if it is not up to standard. Suddenly, it is very important for us to respect these standards. That's why we created this lab. We hope to expand and further develop it in the future.
Radim Bay directs the municipal stadium in Malika, about 30 kilometers northeast of Dakar. He says it costs less to buy the aggregate from a local supplier.
Instead of going to Turkey for supplies, we found aggregate of the same quality on site and on the spot. It's better. It saved us a lot of costs.
Fall said she hopes that eCover's products will fuel the construction of more sports fields and thus promote football in Africa. Alison Nkogo Fernandez for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Santa Claus is returning to U.S. shopping malls after last year's absence because of the COVID-19 pandemic. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
It might look a little different this year with Santa behind a plexiglass shield or wearing a face mask.
Our Santa and the helpers are all vaccinated, and we require that while in the shopping center, people keep their masks on.
At the Hillsdale Shopping Center in San Mateo, California, marketing director Christine Kupchak says they're glad to have Santa back for the children. Sonia Black took her nieces.
Oh, I'm so happy things getting back to normal. You know, the kids is missing out on, you know, the little things.
The number of jolly old elves available is down about 15% in some areas, leaving the remaining very busy for photos, mall visits, and whispered gift wishes. I'm Jackie Quinn.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of Nadia Taha and the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington.